Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone Podcast. I am one of your hosts today, Jimmy Wong.
And I'm DJ. Hello, everyone.
And we'll give one how's it for Josh Lee Kwai, who is not here.
How is it?
Yeah, I wish you would say it like that. How is it? I think there's a Z in that spelling, too. It always mystified me. Today, we are reviewing Strixhaven, the main set review, part one. Wow, that's a lot of words, DJ.
Yeah, what we're getting at is it's not the Commander product. So this is the main Strixhaven set that you open in booster packs. There's a lot of awesome cards in here, and we got to look at how they're going to fit into our Commander decks.
Yeah, and there's a bunch to talk about today. And there's actually going to be two parts of the set review today. We're talking about the mono-colored cards only. But before we get into it, of course, this show, many thanks. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. That's our affiliate link. Strixhaven, 5 different colleges, so many different ways to express yourself as a Magic player. So you're going to want to pick up those cards. You're going to do it anyway. Head on over to CardKingdom.com/CommandZone. Type that little link in there and blammo, you're ready to buy some cards. Also, last month, I don't know if we've mentioned this on the podcast yet, but we raised a ton of money for Magic Kids, who is sending cards to schools to help give them sort of like magic packs and like sort of like create a magic club at their schools. So thanks to you using the affiliate link, whether or not you knew it throughout the month of April, you help support that initiative.
That's really awesome. I like that.
Well, we always love magic because it teaches people stuff. Of course, also Ultra Pro supports this show. You can buy their products. We've got these amazing playmats in front of us, but they got sleeves, deck boxes, everything you need to make your magic set look great, as well as your commander deck protected. Finally, last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. The patrons are our lifeblood. We love them. And of course, we shout one lucky patron out every episode. So this episode is dedicated to Tyler Cadden. Tyler, you rock.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right, let's just dive right into it. Non-legendary creature cards, not creature cards, non-legendary mono-colored cards from the Strixhaven main set, two-part series. This is the first part. You'll see there are other videos. There's a ton of videos coming on the channel, so subscribe if you haven't already.
Ring that bell, because they're not just coming out once a week. They're coming at you all over the place.
All over the place, yeah, and there's a lot to keep up with. Of course, we ought to talk about some of the new mechanics. I don't know if you all covered this.
We kind of touch on the mechanics, because obviously we're talking about a lot of cards in here, but sometimes understanding the mechanics can help you figure out what commander deck it goes into. And some of these actually are really cool mechanics. The first one, I'm a really big fan of.
Yeah, Magecraft. So this is whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell and then something happens, it'll say Magecraft on the card. This is like Strixhaven's big main mechanic. Each college has their own specific flavor of this. So like Silverquill is about pumping creatures and evasion. Prismari often like triggers single instance effects. Witherbloom is life gain. Lorehold is graveyards. Quandrix is +1/+1 counters and resources. But the general idea is that there's a lot of cards that care about casting or copying instants or sorceries. Yay.
Casting instants or sorceries is like a normal thing that we see a lot of time.
Oh, yeah.
But rarely have we seen like that copy clause, which is really cool because it opens up a whole new space for like, well, wait, does it trigger on this? Does it trigger on this? It's really cool.
Yeah, so cards that are just generically going to be good with a lot of this stuff are your Reverberates and your Dual Caster Mage. Mage, dual caster mage.
But all that good stuff, yeah.
All that good stuff. So just keep those in mind as we talk about these cards. Another main mechanic is learn slash lesson. This one's a little less relevant. So if a card says, and it says learn, similar like a card would say investigate or something in the past, you're going to have two choices. The first choice is you rummage, so you discard a card and draw a card, or you reveal a lesson card from outside the game and put it into your hand. Now, that just doesn't matter in our format. We got no sideboards, so learn basically means rummage. Okay, and finally, Ward. It's a new evergreen mechanic, so this is similar to Scry, Flying, Trample, all that stuff. It's a card, it'll say Ward and then a cost. So whenever a permanent with Ward becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you counter it unless the Ward cost is paid. Typically, it's like two extra mana or three life or whatever it is.
Yeah. Protecting your creatures is good. Ward is a pretty good mechanic, although it stinks that it just counters it. So basically you can like, if you are, hopefully you're in a nice play group and this doesn't matter, but online, you know, you can still cast the spell. And then if you can't pay the two, it just gets countered. And you're like, but I wouldn't have cast that otherwise.
No. Ward is just kind of like a mini tax if someone's trying to target your stuff. Won't be as relevant. Magecraft is really the shiny one out of this entire set.
Definitely.
And this first card, we're going to start off with white. The first card we're going to actually read has something else that's sort of a semi-theme, which is there are alternate casting costs to a lot of cards. So this first one, let's go right into it. It's Devastating Mastery. Two. And white. That's four white pips.
That's a lot of pips, right?
Yeah, I don't think you see that very often. So that's six mana total for a sorcery. And it says at the very top, you may pay two white rather than pay this spell's mana cost.
Reasonable casting cost. Okay. Yeah,
four instead of six. And it says if the two white cost was paid, an opponent chooses up to two non-land permanents they control and returns them to their owner's hand. And then the actual card, what it does is destroy all non-land permanents. So just to brief you on what this means, if you pay the regular casting cost, two white, six mana total, destroy all non-land permanents. If you pay two white instead, then you choose an opponent. I go, DJ, you choose two non-land permanents you control, return them to your hand, and then you blow up all non-land permanents.
Huh. So that's a definite downside because I'm immediately like, I will pick up my soul ring and, you know, this
a
relevant
powerful
creature.
Enchantment or a creature. Yeah.
And then I'm feeling pretty good. So really, you have to use this really politically unless you're just doing this as a normal board wipe.
Yeah.
Six mana value for destroy all non-land permanents is pretty boring, but it's pretty much like what it costs a lot of the time.
Planar Cleansing is three white. Hour of Revelation. However, this card actually costs white, just three mana if 10 or more non-land permanents are on the battlefield. So you're
that
not seeing
a lot, yeah.
It happens. Oh yeah, it'll happen almost immediately in Commander games. So the casting cost of Devastating Mastery isn't that interesting. The interesting part is whether or not you're gonna pay four mana to blow up everything and give an opponent two of their non-land permanents back to their hands.
I think you have to use it politically. And I think that this quad white feels really bad. Unless you're in like a mono white deck. Like, I mean, in an Avacyn deck where you want to blow up stuff anyways, maybe.
Right.
I mean, a lot of times white decks, they use artifact ramp. In many cases, they commit to the board with creatures, relevant creatures.
Yeah, this makes it feel even
worse.
And
so like sometimes like these destroy all non-land permanents feel awkward in white decks. And so you see them a lot of times in multicolored decks. And this mana cost is prohibitive. Some people have really expensive, nice mana bases and can support this. But it's not a small cost to include four white pips in a casting cost.
Yeah.
I do like this whole cycle. There's actually a ton of different cycles in this. Because like every Strixhaven...
23 cycles.
23 cycles? That's way more than I thought there
were. Yeah, I read it on a wiki though, so don't quote me.
But it feels like every single school has its own thing. And so we're going to see this mechanic of being able to pay something cheaper and let your opponents have something. I don't think I'm going to run this in very many decks.
I don't think so either. Now, white is trending towards, hey, we got more lands on the battlefield because we're always catching up with all the new cards and the Archaeomancer's maps and stuff. But in general, unless you're playing in a game and there's a JLK going off and, hey, your DJ's stacks cards are the only thing that's going to stop the combo player from rebuilding and redominating the table, then maybe you pay the alternate cost. Say, DJ, you have to return these things, otherwise I won't cast this. But generally, I think this is a bit of a wah-wah.
So. Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's talk about the next one. It is Elite Spellbinder, two and a white for a 3/1. It's very elite. What are you talking about?
Elite.
This is Paolo Vito Domodorosa's championship card.
Oh, it's his championship card?
Yeah,
is that him on it?
Yeah, look at him on it.
Oh my gosh, it's Paolo. So cool. Okay, okay. Read the text.
It's it looks like him. It looks really cool. And it's pushed to be playable. It is pushed to be playable in like a 60 card format.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But you know, it's really cool. So Elite Spellbinder, great name for a championship card. 2 and a white for a 3/1 creature human cleric with flying. When Elite Spellbinder enters the battlefield, a look at target opponent's hand. You may exile a non-land card from it for as long as that card remains exiled, its owner may cast it. Okay, so they can play it, but they have to basically pay 2 more to cast it.
Oh, so it adds a, it basically gives it a commander tax out of
so
their
hand. So you exile the spell, and that spell can be cast no matter what, whether this thing leaves or not, but it always just costs 2 more, and they can cast it out of exile.
Okay, and if this dies, the card doesn't go back to their hand, it just exiles out of their hand.
It's always there, it always just costs 2 more. But it is a single opponent. And in Commander, we often really like it when it hits all of our opponents.
Yeah, I would say this feels like a standard card, a historic card maybe. The only way I see this going nuts in Commander is if you flicker this infinite times and just exile everyone's hand.
And then everything costs, and then here's the thing, everything costs 2 more, but God Pharaoh's statue is just a 6-mana artifact that makes everything cost 2 more and drains them for 1 at the end of the, each turn or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not like some, it's an uncommon artifact. It's not like that's, people are freaking out about playing that card. So, and like there's other taxation effects out there, like Grand Arbiter.
Right.
You know, things like that. So
not too impressive here.
Not very impressive, but like, I wouldn't be surprised to see this in 60 card formats. I will be putting that in my cube.
Oh, that's a fun cube card for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got Leonin Lightscribe, 1 and a white for a 2/2 cat cleric with Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or a sorcery spell, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. So this is the Silver Quill sort of standard limited mechanic. Pump your creatures up. If you're in a token deck, good job. Go wide decks like Kaikar, where you're just making tons of little things.
Yeah, and Kaikar triggers off of spells. So this can, so you usually have a high spell count in there.
There are some cat decks that also pump out a bunch of cat creature tokens, so I could see Leon the Lightscribe being a player, a niche player in those types of decks, but otherwise nothing too crazy here.
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's not too crazy, but like if you find that you have a Monastery Mentor in one of your decks, then maybe you want to have a Lightscribe along with it. Secret Rendezvous.
Ah, yes.
1 white-white for a sorcery. You and target opponent each draw 3 cards.
Yeah, a lot of controversy around this card. I actually got to speak to Mark Rosewater about it briefly. And he was just like, yeah, a lot of people apparently just, they're like, this isn't good enough. This, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, what did you want? Just to, for it to say you draw 3 cards for 1 white-white? No, of course not. Again, I think this is a card that's like pointing its finger directly at Commander. You know, obviously this is going to see some play in Limited maybe, or just awful. I don't know. I think it's actually really bad in Limited.
I think it's really bad in Limited and Standard and any 1v1 format. I actually think it's quite bad.
Yeah, I think it's just for Commander. And for me, I'm totally fine with this. I think Commander's all about having fun. And if you can make a nice little, right? Like we always do this all the time. Give me 2 turns. Give me 1 turn. I'll give you 3 cards. I would take that deal.
Yeah.
Or like whatever you use, like I need your help with this thing. Do you want to draw 3 cards to have a secret rendezvous? Except not so secret at the table because everyone's going to see it happen.
I think it's fine. And I don't know why people are annoyed by it.
Yeah. And honestly, I think Commander could use a little more trending towards the casual direction on occasion. And if people are playing Secret Rendezvous against me at a Magic Fest and I watch it used and it makes people have fun, I'm giving it the thumbs up. I love it.
I'm going to cast it in political decks all the time.
There you go. All right, next up is Semester's End, 3 and a white for an instant. Exile any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers you control. At the beginning of the next end step, return each of them to the battlefield under its owner's control. Each of them enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it if it's a creature and an additional loyalty counter on it if it's a planeswalker. Okay, now this is a little more exciting. This is like, you know, a 4-mana somewhat Teferi's Protection type effect, but of course it's just creatures and planeswalkers, and you get to choose which ones go away.
I can see this doing 2 different things, and the flexibility might make it playable, but for each thing, it's like a little bit not as great. So if it's a protection piece, we have pieces of protection at 3 mana that can like blink out your whole board, like Ghost
Eerie
Play,
Eerie Interlude,
yeah. Stuff like that. Teferi's Protection, like you mentioned, which does, Teferi's Protection does have another level of protection on there. Even the new like a chroma thing that protects your creatures. There's lots of different ways to protect your creatures. The more mana it costs to protect your creatures, the harder it is to actually protect them. Because what ends up happening is that you end up holding mana once you've committed to the board and you don't develop the board, you don't use your mana. You just like play out of fear holding this thing up for a board wipe. So if this costs 4 mana, 5 mana, it gets tricky. It gets harder and harder. Now, if there's blink shenanigans in there, then this could be used for value with blink. One-off blink effects, though, we have them at 3 mana, and those aren't like super important, impressive played all the time. How much value do you need to get off of your 4 mana spell in order to have it be a blink value, you know, play?
You'd need a lot of value. I think the thing that makes this cool is that you can blink planeswalkers, and so that's a way to reset their counters, reset their loyalty, when they come back on the battlefield, and they get one extra, because you're right. You don't want to be playing.
You can't activate them after you blink them in and out. So they come back, and a lot of times they're vulnerable right when they come back, so adding an extra loyalty to them makes them a little bit more resilient.
And your creatures will block them or whatever. But I think like in a Super Friends deck, you know, or the war planeswalkers, once they get really low, you might want to Semester's End them to blink them out and reset them. So I could see that being somewhat relevant. Now, Semester's End with like a doubling season doesn't look good because they come back at the end step. So again, like DJ said, you're not able to activate them. So I think cards like Heroic Intervention, I always look at compared to Semester's End type effects, and why are cards like Heroic Intervention so good? You only have to hold up 2 mana for it. You don't need to care, right? It doesn't matter if you're a blink deck or want those enter the battlefield effects. You can use that against a board wipe. You can use that against targeted removal. It's a great way to just keep your board on the table, and you're not like, you know, to me, Semester's End is, it feels really cool, but you don't really see Eerie Interlude and Ghost Wave get played that often. So you're going to want it in those decks, but don't go thinking this is like, oh, a fantastic new card. It's great for maybe Super Friends to do some
shenanigans. I like it with Super Friends deck. Just imagine, because a lot of times you play the Super Friends, you play your Planeswalkers, and you get some advantage, but you just need to get around the table. And everyone's like, all right, we need to attack them, you know?
Right.
You can block with Chump Block here and there, and then Semester's End, instant speed, everything leaves and comes back, and then you're still sort of a Planeswalker threat.
Yeah, it sucks if you're using like Elspeth to make 3 tokens, and you're like, those are my blockers. True. That's not a good point.
Some of them are just like all of them are blinking away. So maybe this is the one that works for planeswalkers because you don't get those tokens out of the way.
Yeah, not a bad point. All right, Semester's End. You're going to be played, just not as widely as maybe I would have wanted to originally.
Yeah. Okay. We've got Strict Protector.
Proctor.
Strict Proctor.
Much more school themed.
Yes. What in a white for a 1/3 spirit cleric with flying. Whenever a permanent enters the battlefield, choose a... Whenever a permanent entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability to trigger, counter that ability unless its controller pays 2.
Oh, now this is very hateberry. It's a 2 mana 1/3 flyer, so that's kind of nice by itself. But this is just like, hey, good night, flicker decks.
Yeah, good night, all the ETBs. And a lot of times, I think that Commander players use ETBs a lot more than the average player.
Yeah.
If you look at the top 10 creatures, top 50 creatures, a huge amount of them are using ETBs. That's why cards like, you know, Hushbringer, Quatley Honor Guard, Hushwing Griff, all of these are really great white creatures that can just kind of shut down entire deck strategies.
Yeah, I actually liked what you wrote here, which is that this works on any permanents. So bounce lands, when they come in, it says, bounce another card to your hand as it enters the battlefield, but this says counter that ability unless his controller pays 2, so you're not going to pay that.
So that's the way that you can break the symmetry on this.
Right.
All of these other cards that I mentioned, they just say no to ETBs of creatures. This does hit permanents, but the problem is that if you have a really important ETB that you need, like, I don't know, like a Massacre Girl or something like that, they can, it's Commander, we're a big mana format, they can pay the 2.
Right. So this is actually, I think, more interesting for Lotus Field, those like interesting parts where you don't want to actually have that trigger ability happen.
Where you don't have a lot of ETBs yourself. You can have a few. You're okay to have some nombos in your deck.
Yeah.
But you abuse it and hope that it slows your opponents down at the same time.
But if you are playing your Kodama of the First Tree or your Panharmonicon.decks against them, Strict Proctors, yeah, it's really annoying because that 2-mana adds up. Because those decks want to make 4 or 5 different ETB triggers happen, or they want to double down on stuff all the time, and now it's saying, like, sorry, you gotta pay. That will definitely slow them down. And for 2-mana, I think this is like one of those hate bears that, again, as long as you're not super messed up by it, I could definitely see it being a pretty fun card to slow your opponents down just enough, but not in a way that's like really people would
too
hate
hateful?
You for. Yeah, it's not too hateful. Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you call it? Like semi-stacks? I don't know.
I'd still, when you tax people, it's still going to be some stacksy element to it.
Yeah, and some people will hate it, but maybe your other players around the table will be like, thank goodness you're doing that. Otherwise, they'd be going off like crazy.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to blue here. First up is a card that was previewed all the way back when Strixhaven was first being talked about. It's Archmage Emeritus. 2 blue-blue for a 2/2 human wizard with Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, draw a card. So 4 mana, a little bit overcosted for this, but the ability obviously very strong. And it's a 2/2, so it's a little fragile, but hey, you get to draw a ton of cards with this card if no one gets rid of it.
If you cast one spell and draw a card off of it, it's already a pretty good card.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you draw two, it's great. And then obviously the intent of this is to keep going and drawing more and more cards.
Yeah, if you have a bunch of cantrips that already say draw a card and then now you're drawing another one. This as an enchantment obviously would be really powerful, but it's a human wizard, so you got all those tribal connections there. Mm-hmm. If you're playing a Tauran deck, I could see you running something like this because you're always countering
and
stuff.
Make drakes for
yeah,
sure.
And you're already trying to stop people from killing things, so your Archmage is going to be very powerful to sit there.
If we look at similar commanders that have this mechanic, Niv-Mizzet or Joyra,
right.
Both of these can have their different ways to trigger to draw cards, and they're powerful.
Would you remove this on site in the right deck?
Oh, 100%. Are you kidding me?
Okay, there
this
you go.
This would draw so many cards.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want to let this stick around. Otherwise, you're letting your opponent kind of go off if they're ready to do so. And if it's in your deck, you're hopefully playing this and at least holding up a couple mana to get an instant or sorcery in just in case.
I'd honestly be afraid of, like, they have Tauran or something else, and this hits the battlefield, and then I'm like, all right, the thing's bad things. We need to board wipe. And then they counter, draw a card, make a drake, you know? Do this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's this disruption vibe and getting you to keep going, you know?
Yeah.
Because as you try to interact with them, they disrupt you and then draw more cards to disrupt you even more.
Yep. Ugh. And that's the last thing you want
feels
to
like
on deck
Brawl.
To do.
Ugh.
Ugh. Ugh. Oh gosh. Brawl is, this would go in the Brawl deck, I think, because it makes them all cost way cheaper, the things that are drawing you cards now.
Yeah. Okay. Ingenious Mastery. This is the mastery for blue. X2 blue. Okay. So for a sorcery, you may pay 2 and a blue rather than pay the spell's mana cost. If 2 and a blue cost was paid, you draw 3 cards. Then an opponent creates 2 treasure tokens and they scry 2.
Jeez.
Okay, so before I get into the X, this could be a 2 and a blue, you draw 3, your opponent creates 2 treasures and scries 2. Okay. If you did pay X, you draw X cards.
Okay, so this could just be a, for 5 mana, you're paying 3, sorry.
5 mana,
two
draw
for
2.
X. Yeah, draw 2. No thanks.
6 mana, draw 3?
No thanks.
7 mana, no.
No. No thanks at almost any level. And this is the mastery cycle, just so you know. There's one in each color.
Yeah.
These are sort of the alternate mana cost ones.
So now, we don't like the rate of paying X for this. What about the just 2 and a blue, you draw 3 cards, which by the way is good.
Yeah, divination plus 1, not bad.
Yeah.
But and your opponent makes 2 treasures and scries 2.
Yes.
So keep in mind that the white version of this, again, let your opponent bounce 2 non-land permanents back to their hand. That, I think, is much stronger than 2 treasures, scry 2. Sometimes it's tough. I don't know. I feel like this card, I'm, one, never going to play because it is...
Wait a second. What about in like a Zaxara deck where X matters?
Sure, maybe. But I feel like unless you're really helping someone, right? You don't want to ever give this to someone that's on par with you or slightly ahead. The only person you want to target with this is someone that's super far behind that would really need the treasures and the whatever.
Because Scry 2 is almost a card, and 2 treasures are surprisingly good.
Oh yeah, like, especially like, if they're, and like heaven forbid they're an artifact deck. Jeez.
I mean, it just ramps them ahead to something even more relevant. People might dismiss the treasures. I've seen people all online and on Twitter be like, you know, it's 2 treasures. It's nothing. You know what I mean?
That's not nothing. Say that.
Yeah, it's really not nothing. It's a pretty big boost to be able to generate a few treasures.
Yeah, so I think this is definitely, it's a real tough one to Unless you're, again, in that type of deck where you're happy to have a secret rendezvous, you're happy to give your opponent a lot of value.
I like that.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to sort of justify this type of card. Again, maybe there will be that time when someone is super mana screwed and they definitely need it. But the other option of this card for X to and two in the blue is not attractive whatsoever. It's just way too much mana to draw cards, especially in blue, which is very good at doing it already.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's in blue, right?
Yeah, they don't need, right? They don't
like,
need.
Thirst for Knowledge is draw three, you know, like, yeah. There's a lot of them.
All right. And also, I will say that that's a sorcery. Thirst for Knowledge is an instant.
I know.
Not feeling good now.
Yeah, not feeling good.
All right, next up, we got Kelpie Guide. It's two in the blue for a creature beast 2/2. You can tap it to untap another target permanent you control. You can also tap it to tap target permanent, and you activate this only if you control 8 or more lands. So this first line is probably the most interesting. This is just untapping another permanent you control. This can untap a land. If you got that Gaia's Cradle out there or a Gilded Lotus, blammo, that's a lot of untapping ability. This is definitely like a Josh Lee Kwai type of card, like Vizier of Tumbling Sands is another card I know he likes as well.
Yeah, basically, I think that you should pay attention to these little things more. Their budget, and they're better than you think.
Yeah.
You know, they're good little mana dorks.
Pretty powerful.
Yeah. Okay, I have multiple choice. X into blue. But different things happen if you put different amounts of mana into X. So if X is one, scry one, then draw a card. Okay. If X is two, you may choose a player. They return a creature they control to its owner's hand. If X is three, create a 4/4 blue and red elemental creature token. If X is four or more, do all of the above.
Okay. All right.
So let's
go through
let's
them.
Go through, yeah, let's go through okay. them at each one. So one in a blue, scry one, draw card. Would you pay that?
Yes, I would probably pay that. It would be better if I was in a Baral type deck where I could reduce mana costs, but one in the blue.
But you feel like it's not like you should be paying one for that.
I think I should be paying one for scry one, draw a card.
Because scry two, draw a card, like Preordain and Ponder.
Opt, right? There are a bunch of cards that exist at that. So at one in the blue, it does feel like a uncommon slash common level power level.
Okay. For three mana, two in a blue, opponent returns a creature.
Yeah,
one
no
opponent.
Thanks. No thanks, never. Yeah, okay. I actually never want that to happen, right. Really.
So
unless they only have one creature out for some reason.
Yeah. So then we have...
Three in the blue.
Three in the blue. So four mana to make a 4/4.
Okay. Four mana, 4/4. That's limited playable.
Limited, yeah, limited playable in blue.
Nice. All right.
Okay, now we have five mana value, four in a blue, for make a 4/4, scry one, draw a card, target opponent returns a creature to its owner's hand.
I think that's actually pretty decent at that point.
That is actually pretty decent.
Yeah, five
because
mana.
Think about a Moldrifter. A Moldrifter is, you know,
draw two
a
cards.
Smaller body, draw two cards.
Yeah.
You know, this
and
is...
And gives you the option to cast it at three.
Yeah. Well, this does give you options to cast it at a bunch of different rates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But I feel like even if you, right, like even doing the four mana option is bad in Commander. So you want to be
I don't think
only doing the five mana option.
I don't think you'll ever do the four mana option. I think that you will.
You do the two mana option or the five mana option
exactly.
is where I'm at.
Or
the four mana option if you desperately need the creature. But I think, honestly, you got to be at five mana for this card to be playable.
I think that the three and the four, the creature and the bounce, are when you're desperate. Like someone cheats a Blightsteel into play or something crazy like that. And you're like, I need you to get rid of this right now.
Yeah, hoping it's their only creature. I think like the nice part about this card is that it's playable early and it's definitely playable late. Because the two mana part of it isn't ideal, but let's say you're struggling for lands and you just need something to do on your turn two. I mean, ideally you're ramping or playing like a mana rock, but should you be in that sticky situation, I could see it working there. But this is kind of, it's not super flashy for me otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I actually think that a lot of people will play it because number one, Moldrifter goes really well in creature decks and blink decks. They use the body.
Yeah.
And this might go really well with when they use the spell or they use the creature token. You know what I mean? There are a lot of decks that want spells rather than creatures, and that could be good. I mentioned Zexara earlier, like this could create a Hydra along with it, or, you know, Mizzix can reduce the casting cost of it and things like that.
If you're casting this for one blue mana with Mizzix, then yeah, go nuts. Play this in there. But I feel like a Mizzix deck, when it hits the battlefield, people are going to be scared of more things than a multiple choice answer.
You know, there was that cycle of cards that had basic land cycling on them where it did something and then they also had basic land cycling. I really liked those cards because it was like, okay, you have this effect that you're going for.
Uh-huh.
But if you need mana, you need mana in Commander. Like, so go and get the mana that you need.
Yeah.
I feel that if you're stumbling on mana or stumbling on something and you need it, like one in a blue, get deeper, get to your mana, hit those land drops. You know what I mean? When you need to play it, you know, it's okay that you're overpaying for it.
Yeah, I just think that you're probably going to play Ponder in those moments instead, because you're going to want to save that slot for something else. I don't know. We'll see. All right, moving on. Solve the Equation after multiple choice. This is a test, all right. This is a card I'm actually super excited about. 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Search your library for an instant or a sorcery card. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Woohoo! It's a tutor at uncommon. Now, it ain't no mystical tutor, but it is a sorcery that's 2 and a blue, and it's a card that I think is just going to be very valuable for so many commander players out there, because it will be budget, it will be available, and it will be able to give you an effect at a not super cheap cost that I think is pretty fair, all things considered.
Yeah. The cheaper tutors are, the better they are. Yes. You know,
and the instant speed too.
Instant speed, especially with ones that set up the top of your library, are really important, because like, You can basically set it up beforehand, and then when you draw it, it replaces the draw.
Yeah.
This one tutors to your hand, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're not losing out on it, but you're kind of taxing your next spell by 3. Mm-hmm. So the more mana it costs, the worse it is. Very few cards, like Diabolic Tutor, like very few cards are worth 4 extra mana. Right. You know? But
Solve the Equation, 3 mana. You play Spellseeker, right, DJ? You wrote that down.
I play Spellseeker.
A lot of people play Spellseeker. Yeah.
And that has a more limited search quality. So yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
So good job, uncommon. I like it, thank goodness.
Yes. Tempted by the Auric. 1 blue, blue, blue for a sorcery. For each opponent, gain control of up to 1 target creature or planeswalker that player controls with mana value 3 or less.
All right, this was actually our preview card, so make sure you head on over to that video, because we talk about this card, whether or not you're going to get anything, what popular cards in the format are 3 mana value or less, and all that good stuff.
Surprising amount of them, honestly. I was like, and then I like did the research and looked it up, and it was way more than I thought. So
I actually like this card quite a bit, so I'm excited about it. So we'll see. But make sure you click that link. It's going to be in the description box. It'll be somewhere. It'll just be on our channel. If you're subscribed, you probably already have seen it, but we're not going to talk about it more here because we got a lot more cards to go. And before we get back to it, we got black, red, and green on deck. We're going to take a quick mid-roll break and hear from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, we are back with the Strixhaven set review, main set review, part one of two, the only monocolored cards here. Okay, there's too much to talk about, so we're just going to get right into it.
We're in the black cards.
All right, the first up is one that, well, we're both very excited about. It is the Black Mastery of the cycle, Baleful Mastery. 3 and a black for an instant. You may pay 1 and a black rather than pay the spell's mana cost. If the 1 and a black cost was paid, an opponent draws a card. Exile target creature or planeswalker. So 3 and a black instant, exile target creature or planeswalker. 1 and a black instant, exile target creature or planeswalker, an opponent draws a card. Okay.
So 4 mana, exile a planeswalker, creature a planeswalker is good.
Yeah, it's that's fine.
Because like Vraska's Contempt, but honestly, like Vraska's Contempt gaining a couple life, like I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The flexibility on this.
That's where it matters.
I do care a lot.
So exiling a target creature or planeswalker, that's really important, right? So 2 mana exile a planeswalker, right? You have the Elder spell to get rid of planeswalkers, but really planeswalker removal, relatively new in the game based on how long they've been around.
Like there's only like small things. It's like, oh, destroy something 3 or less or something like that. So really that cost, the 2 mana to exile a planeswalker,
right,
is like unheard of. And then even going after creatures at 2 mana, there's always like a catch. It's like non-black, monocolored, multicolored,
yeah,
like non-artifact, you know.
This is a catch-all.
And it exiles. A lot of those destroy too.
Mm-hmm.
Giving someone a card is a big cost.
It is a big cost. Maybe you are like, hey, DJ, no one likes that creature you got played. I'm going to exile it, but don't get mad at me. You get to draw a card.
That might work.
Right? Like, yeah. could you remove the hate? I mean,
I'm a big fan of Arcane Denial.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
counter, but you draw.
Yeah, I'm going to counter it, but guess what? Like, you get to draw, you know, and I get to replace my card too.
All right. That's how I'm going to play the mastery of this one.
I will say, I can
feel it now, right? It's game nights. We're all sitting around the table. I'm like, Josh, I'm going to do this. And he's going to go, no, I'm still going to attack you. You killed my creature. I'm like, all right, someone else gets to draw the card. And they're like, wait.
But the thing is that a lot of times when you have the option, one side is bad.
Yeah.
The big mana costing side of this is not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Like the blue one that we looked at, you know, the blue mastery.
Let's not, 2 treasures and scry 2 versus 1 opponent drawing 1 card. I think that's
But also like the front side of it where it's like pay 5, draw 2.
Yeah.
Like, that's not playable.
That's not playable. This is playable.
4 mana exiled, the thing is very playable.
It is very playable. Instant speed, again, that instant speed changes everything about this because the last 2 matches we talked about are not instants.
Okay. All right. I like this one. It's Callous Blood Mage. 2 and a black for a 2/1 creature, vampire, warlock. More warlocks in this set than we've ever had before.
It's World of Warcraft now, guys.
When Callous Blood Mage enters the battlefield, choose one. Create a 1/1 black and green pest creature token with, when this creature dies, you gain a life. You draw a card, you lose 1 life. Exile target player's graveyard.
Okay, that's a lot of options on this guy.
This is one of my favorite cards in the set, honestly.
Very callous.
Because creating 2 bodies for a lot of different decks is really good.
Yes.
You know, whenever they use that body, you know, we sacrifice it, weaponize it, you know, turn it into something else. It can be quite good.
Aristocrats.
Exactly.
Is this set, yeah.
Drawing a card.
Losing 1 life. Phyrexian Razor, one of my favorite cards of all time in Limited. Just 2 and a black for a creature where you draw a card. I love that.
Just very playable. And then also the last one I think should just be in way more decks. It's amazing. Yeah. Just exile target opponent's graveyard.
Look, if you're playing a vampire deck and you're like, I need a way to exile players' graveyards, Callous Blood Mage, it just becomes your auto-include as a creature because it matches your synergies. But like even just 2 and a black for 2 creatures and one of them's a pest or 2 and a black draw a card, right? There's a lot of different modalities on this. I think that you're going to be pretty happy
Every
when you
mode
play this.
Feels good, right?
It feels pretty good.
Useful.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, like, look, if you don't have any synergies with tokens or sacrificing them, aristocrats, whatever, then maybe the first part doesn't look so great. But I'm fine with a 3 mana 2/1 that draws a card and loses a life if I need it. But more importantly, I think you're just going to play this in Silver Bullet someone's graveyard every time. And they're going to hate you for it. Charming Prince was a comparison you made. I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, it just feels like there's always something to do with it. Like there's always value to be gained.
Yeah.
Even though you look at it, it's like, oh, it's a dinky little creature. It's like, no, it actually like synergizes really well and gives you options no matter where you are in the game.
Yeah, I think when Wizards makes cards like this, my little heart jumps for joy because everyone watching or listening, can you envision a scenario or deck where each of these options is valuable? And I think every single person watching would be like, yes. Absolutely.
Yes, I have a vampire deck. Yes, I like to draw cards. Yes, I play against a bajillion different graveyard synergies.
Right.
Graveyard decks are out there like crazy. You need this kind of effect a lot more often than you think.
Yeah, and it's not pushed. It's not going to be super expensive. It's going to be widely available. And that's the kind of card I like to see in my format. All right, moving on. Confront the Past. X and a black for a sorcery lesson. Choose one. Return target planeswalker card with mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, or remove twice X loyalty counters from target planeswalker and opponent controls. The art is very sad here. Liliana or Professor Onyx is looking at the mirror and realizing that Gideon's dead husk of a corpse is haunting her past.
Oh, cool.
The cool thing about this card is black has a lot of reanimator effects, but not that many for planeswalkers, especially ones that are X in the black, because you can bring back cards at specific costs. There is, you know, ones that cost four black to bring a bunch back and lose a lot of life. But Confront the Past does something that's somewhat new again in black because it's planeswalker related.
Yeah. One thing about the front part is that I really don't like that you can't cheat the mana.
Yeah.
You know, because you're bringing back a planeswalker for one more, one black more than it costs. I like reanimator when you cheat the mana cost. Just playing it from the graveyard, like, yeah, that's value. It's like I'm drawing the card, but... Yep. You know, I like to cheat, but I guess it makes up for it with the fact that you can kill something too.
Yeah, I will say that the killing something, probably, right? Like, if it's removed twice X loyalty counter, so let's say
What's the biggest loyalty that you see?
Well, typically, six? Something, yeah, they'll play something, it'll go down to four or three if they're minusing it, otherwise they'll plussing it up to five or six. So for three and a black, you should be able to get rid of most planeswalkers on the battlefield.
Which is a good rate we've seen from...
Literally, moments ago from Baleful Mastery, right?
So yeah. I feel like this is an efficient planeswalker removal spell.
I would just ask yourself, do you need Planeswalker Recursion in your Super Friends deck? Because this card is literally, right, if your opponents aren't playing Planeswalkers, and I feel like a lot of Magic players still don't in Commander, they're not as common, then this card, half it just doesn't matter. But if you're a deck that wants to always be bringing back Planeswalkers, and you know there are Planeswalkers on the battlefield generally, then this is better. Otherwise, I would say this is right around the middle. It really is meta-dependent and deck-dependent.
Agreed. Okay. Auric Lore Mage, 2BB for a 3/3 creature human warlock, has an activated ability.
Oh, yes. Tap,
search your library for a card, put it into your graveyard, then shuffle. If it's an instant or sorcery card, put a +1/+1 counter on Auric Lore Mage.
Yes! Okay, so black, red, and blue, before this set, literally, only had like one or two ways to be able to add a +1/+1 counters onto their creatures. And I say this is important because I've been on the lookout since the beginning because of Marchesa of the Black Rose. So this is like an amazing card in that deck because, again, putting cards into your graveyard can be like drawing them in the right decks. You wrote down cards like Corpse Connoisseur, Gravebreaker Lamia.
These are widely played. You know, people play just Entomb. They give up a card in value to just put a card in their graveyard, and this creature can do it over and over and over again.
If you're playing a deck that likes to have cards, instants, and sorceries in the graveyard, even better, especially if you're going to flash them back or whatever. So Auric Lore Mage has a way to give itself a +1/+1 counter, making it great for Marchesa decks. It also has ways to put awesome stuff in the graveyard for Around Me decks, Chainer, Dementia decks. Kess is a perfect place.
Well, think of Marisol the Pretender that wants things in the graveyard and wants to use activated abilities and like steals them. You know what I mean?
Nice, yeah.
It's super good with that.
Yeah, so I actually like this card quite a bit. It reminds me of the fact that I need to be on the lookout now because there are a lot more cards that put +1/+1 counters on creatures in black. Woo-hoo!
Okay, so Necrotic Ooze has activated abilities of all the cards in your graveyard. Mm-hmm. Okay. So with this in your graveyard or Necrotic Ooze on the battlefield, you can just tap the Necrotic Ooze to put anything into your graveyard. For example, a Devoted Druid, which has the activated ability of putting a -1 counter on it and untapping. Then you can tap it again to start putting other stuff into your graveyard. For example, Morse Hoarder.
I got to look this card up. I've never heard of this card in my life.
Basically gives you infinite mana with this combo. And then you can put whatever activated
morsel
ability you want.
Morsel Hoarder. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, it comes to play with -1/-1 counters on it, but you remove it to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Aha! I see we're on the way to making infinite mana.
Devoted Druid puts it on. Morsel Hoarder. You're right, I have to look it up too. It takes it off and creates a mana. You just keep doing this with just one Necrotic Ooze you have on the battlefield. All the rest of the stuff is safe in your graveyard. And then, bam, you have infinite mana. Do whatever you want. You can even activate it one more time. Throw an Una in your graveyard. And then your Necrotic Ooze has the activated ability of Una. Create a bajillion fairies / mill all your opponents out.
I mean, hey, play this with Kelpie Guide. Untap it. Do it twice. This is basically a tutor. It's a repeatable tutor into your graveyard, and it has extra upside with +1/+1 counters if it's an instant or sorcery.
Crazy good card.
Pretty good card, yeah. All right, next up is the first Planeswalker we'll be talking about, and the only one we'll be talking about in the monocolor cards. It's Professor Onyx, aka Liliana. It's a legendary Planeswalker, Liliana, for 5 loyalty, with 5 loyalty. It has a static ability of Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life.
Whew.
Whew. Storm decks.
Tendrils of Liliana.
Tendrils of Liliana, yeah. Professor Onyx's +1 is you lose 1 life. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. The -3, each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power among creatures that players controls. And then the -8, each opponent may discard a card. If they don't, they lose 3 life. Repeat this process 6 more times. So that's like
a torment of hellfire.
It's a torment of hellfire on an ultimate. Now, she comes in with 5. I don't think you're ever getting to 8, really. But if you do, that's pretty win the game moments.
I don't see how you can't win the game before that with that crazy Tendrils of Agony text on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're drawing cards, and then every spell you cast, it's like, drain all of you guys. Oh my gosh.
And the +1's not bad. You lose a life. You get 1 draw out of that, and then the rest go into your graveyard. This is a color that likes having heavy graveyard stuff in there. So Professor Onyx, though, I would just compare her for me to like the other 6 mana Professor Liliana's in the past. Like Liliana, Dreadhorde General. I think that card's pretty sweet
card too,
because you're drawing cards when creatures die.
It feels different. Like, you need the instants and sorceries for this one.
Yeah, exactly. This one's definitely the Magecraft version of Liliana, which is cool. But 6 mana is an expensive Planeswalker. You really need your deck to be focused on that ability. Otherwise, it's not going to be as flashy or as good as you want.
All right. Let's take a look at our last black card. It's Sedgemore Witch. 2 and a black for a 3/2 creature human warlock with menace. It has ward of pay 3 life. You know, so it's not the mana cost.
Right, not
this
mana
time.
Cost. You have to pay 3
ward,
life to target
3
it.
Life. Interesting. Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, create a 1/1 black and green pest creature token with, when this creature dies, you gain 1 life.
Okay. All right, Sedgemore Witch.
I'm a big fan of this card.
Really? Why is that?
Because you just think of the Liliana. We imagined that sort of draining, like cast a bunch of spells. Mm-hmm. With this, it comes down early. It doesn't come down at 6. Like, yeah. It comes down early, and every spell you cast, it's creating a 1/1. We know that Monastery Mentor is good. We know that Young Pyromancer and those other effects that create 1/1s is really good. This is creating those 1/1 pests, which are slightly better than those 1/1 elementals.
Yeah, and you can play this in mono black as well, because it doesn't have, even though it makes a black and green creature, it doesn't actually have any green pips or anything on it. So yeah, Sedgemore Witch, 2 in the black, same cost as your Mentor and Young Pyros. So
Mentor might be better, but it is...
Well, Mentor is definitely a little bit better, yeah.
But we're comparing it to an amazing card.
This, even by itself, Mentor is a huge target for removal, so you're actually charging them a little bit more because of the ward of 3 life.
I like this in Sig River Cutthroat decks, because you're always trying to get in 3 damage, and you are trying to go wide.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, you do have some more of that spell synergy.
Okay.
I like this style of card, because it's not as big and flashy as some of the 6 mana, 7 mana spells, but it comes down, it goes under the radar, and it gives you value over multiple turns just by playing your normal commander game.
Yeah, I like this as well. You're just going to get a lot of value out of it, obviously. Again, if your deck has ways to use those creatures, great. But, 2 in the black, 3/2 Menace. That's a pretty standard.
Oh, I forgot to say Menace. Josh yelled at me earlier.
I'm not going to yell at you. I'm just going to say it later. All right, moving on to Red. Let's see if Red had some helpers here. Kaldheim had a lot of great cards for Red. We'll see if they match up to that in this set. First up is Conspiracy Theorist. Looks exactly like one, by the way. You'd expect, you know, this person to be shouting at you over the internet about something. One and a red for a 2/2 creature human shaman. Whenever Conspiracy Theorist attacks, you may pay one mana and discard a card. If you do, draw a card. And whenever you discard one or more non-land cards, you may exile one of them from your graveyard. If you do, you may cast it this turn. Okay, so that first line of text, no thanks.
No, but the fact that you can kind of still have access to those cards that you discard is interesting. I like that.
Yeah, which is cool because they're not tied to each other, right? Which is nice because rummaging is something that Red does quite a lot. Cathartic Reunion, Faithless Looting, these are all cards that discard cards into your graveyard. And unfortunately, you can only cast a card. It's not, you can't like discard a land, exile it, and play it. But this does give you a little bit of extra value there, which is kind of nice. So this, I'm looking at this like an enchantment effect. It's one in a red for this enchantment. If you're looting a lot, Merfolk Looter, Jace Friend's Prodigy, this is good. Bedlam Reveler is a card that discards your hand as well when you play it. Riel the Everwise seems like a perfect place for this
you
card.
You want to discard with that commander like crazy. So having another level of discard and access to those cards is really good.
Yeah, you could even wheel with this or Windfall with this and find that last value of that card that you didn't want to discard, but you actually can still play it this turn.
Yeah, comes down really early. I like the curve of that for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a good one. This one is Cackle with Power. Jimmy,
crackle,
what's your...
Crackle. No, you will be cackling.
Oh, it is Crackle with Power.
You will be cackling when you
cast
this.
I was about to ask you what your favorite cackle was. And...
That's like the witch cackle.
Why isn't it Cackle with Power? Okay, Crackle with Power. XXX red red.
Woo.
Oh, that mana cost.
Okay, triple
crackle
X.
Crackle with Power deals 5 times X damage to each of up to X targets.
Okay.
Jimmy, so, I printed out a chart.
I saw there's a table on here because, you know, when you look at cards like this, they're hard to evaluate unless you understand, right, what you're paying for X, what's totally going to cost.
Yeah, like you can imagine that's just like, oh my gosh, 5 times X, this is going to be huge. And
huge.
It can be huge, but you have to know what you're paying into it.
Okay. Yeah, each of X targets, by the way. So if you pay 5 for X, you're going to be able to target 5 different things. But let's go through it.
Yeah, so let's say you're paying 1 for X.
Okay, so that's going to cost you... XXX, so 1/1, red. So that's 5 mana.
5 mana. You're dealing 5 damage to 1 target.
No thanks.
You don't want a lava axe?
Lava axe. At least it's a target and not directly to a player.
Okay. So you can't, now you have to go up by 3s. So there's no like, oh, I have 6 or 7 mana. So right. You have to jump straight up to 8 total mana. That's X is 2. So 8 total mana, you're dealing 10 damage to 2 targets.
Okay. And the total damage is 20. And you actually, Alex, also calculated how much damage per mana.
Yes.
So that's 2.5 damage for the mana you cast, because it's 20
over... Which is quite a good rate.
Yeah, over 8. Know. Yeah, not bad, not bad.
Okay. 11. If you pay 3
X is equal to 3. So
yeah, X is equal to 3.
CMC
so
is 11, oh boy.
Yeah. So basically, you're dealing 15 damage, total damage of 45 spread out. With a damage per mana of 4.1.
To 3 people. So 11 mana, you're dealing a lot. 15 damage 15 to, three,
damage
different
to
targets,
3 different targets.
45 total. That's pretty good.
That's 4.1 damage per mana is insane.
Yeah, that's a lot. That Lightning Bolt, by the way, one of the most efficient red burn spells ever, is 1 red mana for 3 damage. So by going from X is equal to 2 to 3, you are getting past Lightning Bolt efficiency.
Yeah. There are some red spells out there that are very, very efficient that hit each opponent.
Right.
That can be good, like Price of Progress or...
Your Earthquake type effect,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, or your 2 red that deals Fiery Confluence.
Yeah.
So there are some damage spells out there that have a really good rate. It's hard to be able to imagine a cast... Like, I can keep going up to, like, do you want to do 32 mana? So if you sink 10 into it, it'll do... 50 damage.
So X is equal to 10. So 10, 20, 30 plus 2. Yeah, that's 50 damage, 500 total damage to 10 different targets. That's 15.6 damage for each.
Yeah. But how much are we really casting? 10? 11? Is 11 the top end of this?
I think 11 is the most you're presumably going to be able to put into this.
And then so that might be like 15 to each of your opponents.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
It's. I think that this gets even better if you can reduce mana cost, if you can cheat things, if you have a huge influx of mana, like you cheat a lot of your mana.
Yeah, right. Like I could see this being good on both ends of Neheb the Eternal, which is one of my favorite decks, because sometimes I just make like 40 mana on the second main phase. And then Blammo, you can then pump that into a Crackle with Power and Cackle with Victory. But otherwise, yeah, it's going to be tough. Wart the Raid Mother maybe as well. And like you said, Mizzix.
Yeah, in those situations, you're copying, you're cheating the mana, you're getting a little bit extra because it is clunky investing XXX because the X needs to be pretty big for you to get that huge mana value. Because just on its surface, like 5 damage for 5, it's like a bad...
Yeah, it's
removal
bad.
Spell.
It's bad. You need to be 3 or 4 is the sweet spot. So 8 mana or 11 mana. So you treat this as a finisher. All right, Draconic Intervention. 2 red for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast a spell, exile an instant or a sorcery card from your graveyard. Draconic Intervention deals X damage to each non-dragon creature where X is the exiled card's mana value. If a creature dealt damage this way would die this turn, exile it instead. Exile Draconic Intervention. Okay. So this reminds us of Crux of Fate, which is a black board wipe that can destroy all non-dragon creatures or all dragon creatures, and it's pretty good in those dragon decks.
Yeah, in dragon decks, they love it, because it's a 5-mana one-sided board wipe. If this can be a one-sided board wipe for your dragon deck, then it will be very good, but there's an extra hoop, and so we have to wonder how big
is that hoop. Yeah, you need to have an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to exile, otherwise you just can't cast this card. You literally can't cast it. And then it's dealing damage based on that. So let's say you did, oh, cool, I have a Faithless Looting I can exile out of there. Well, guess what? You deal 1 damage to each non-dragon creature. Eh.
Do you know what I was thinking? I was thinking about doing a Prismari Dragons deck with the Elder Dragon from the
Galazeth
Prismari.
Galazeth Prismari,
The one that does crazy things with artifacts, turning them into Moxen.
Right.
But also wants some big spells because you can ramp so well. I was thinking about doing like a Dragonstorm type thing.
Okay,
Do you like dragons? Is it Prismari? Throw this dragon board wipe in there. You know, get some big cool stuff going on.
Yeah, I do love a dragon deck. I do have one that I've played very often in teamer colors. So Draconic Intervention, I think it can be good, but the restrictiveness really does make me less excited about
it. Like I have a Jund dragon tribal deck. And I don't think I can play this just because I have Crux of Fate in there, but like what are the odds that I'm going to be able to put that into the graveyard? Like I have dragons in the deck, you know what I mean? Like
yeah, you don't have as many instants or sorceries, and the ones that you do are like
Cultivate and like
right,
like that.
But is dealing 3 damage to each non-dragon creature going to be enough? Maybe. It is more selective. And the nice thing is it does exile those cards. So I think, you have to be playing a dragon deck, I think.
I think so, too.
And 2, you got to make sure you have a reasonable, reliable way to get enough.
What if you just have, like, 2 dragons? Then what if it's just your commander's dragon?
I could see that working, too.
It's just like a little bit of a board wipe.
I mean, in that case, you know, red, again, look, red doesn't have... If you're mono red and you're a dragon deck, this is great. Because red doesn't have that much access to board wipes. Because like a Blasphemous Act looks really nice with this, right? Because you Blasphemous Act or you put it in the graveyard and then Blammo, you can exile that with Draconic Intervention, do a ton of damage.
Yeah, but you just mentioned Blasphemous Act and now all I want is a Blasphemous Act.
Yeah, I want Blasphemous Act too. Well, it's Dragonous Act. Okay, moving on.
Efreet Flame Painter. 3 and a red for a 1/4 Efreet Shaman. It's got double strike.
Hey.
Whenever Efreet Flame Painter deals combat damage to a player, you may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard without paying its mana cost.
Ooh.
That spell would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead.
Okay.
It's got double strike, so if it does get through, it's going to hit, cast a spell, and then hit again and cast a spell.
Right, can't cast the same one because it's going to be exiled, but this does seem pretty interesting. I like it. Okay.
But one thing is that you might remember, or you might not actually remember, Wildfire Eternal.
Right.
It was the one that lets you cast spells if it made contact and it had afflict.
Yeah, and blocked. Isn't blocked, because it afflict 4, so if it isn't blocked, then yeah.
It was not played very much.
No, because you're casting it without paying its mana cost, and it gets back to the graveyard too. It's not even getting exiled. But a free Flame Painter, on the other hand...
Even more reason to block it. Only 1 power, so...
Very easy to block, right?
Yeah. But I find that more and more often, maybe it's different in your playgroup, but a lot of people are, you know, toning back their creatures. I almost always have someone to freely attack on turn 3 or 4.
Right. And if you're playing this in your Subira deck, then you have the ability to make this unblockable. Torbrand makes it harder to block as well.
Torbrand.
So I could see this working, but again, you have to have enough targets in your graveyard for this to work. So you want to be in a Spells Matters deck as well. It's kind of like Warren Instigator, which lets you cat goblins on the battlefield. It's got double strike, but you got to be in a goblin deck to do so. So I think a Efreet Flame Painter seems like it's pretty hype, but it does need to be very deck dependent again. Okay, last red card is the Red Mastery in the Mastery Cycle. Fervent Mastery. 3 red for a sorcery. You may pay 2 red rather than pay the spell's mana cost. That's just 1 mana less. Mm. If the 2 red cost is paid, an opponent discards any number of cards, then draws that many cards. What? however, what the spell says is search your library for up to 3 cards, put them into your hand, shuffle, then discard 3 cards at random. It's like a triple gamble.
Jimmy, what do you think of triple gamble?
I mean, I think it's way too risky, that's for sure.
What if you need a board wipe? And so you just go and you get 3 board wipes and just, you're going to end up with one of them, right?
Hopefully. I mean, as long as you don't discard all 3 of them. This absolutely sucks if this is the last card in your hand. And I think in general, you want to find cards that will be good for your Underworld Breaches or your, you know, Chainer Nightmare Adepts.
If you're getting a pass in Flames, then it's fine.
Yeah, you know? No matter where it goes, it's going to have value.
One thing that is a little bit sad is that Gamble is so good because it is so cheap.
1 red mana, yeah.
Yeah, 1 red mana to get it. And a lot of times, it doesn't matter if it ends up in your graveyard or sometimes you just take the risk.
Yeah. I feel like you never want to just search up stuff and hope you don't discard it, because discarding 3 cards out of your hand, there's a good chance you're going to lose some of them.
And especially hurts if you're looking for one thing, because then there's 3 chances of getting rid of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you're never, ever going to pay the 2 red cost, because this is absurd. You let someone discard any number of cards and draw that many cards. If they're in the graveyard deck, good job. You really just powered them up. Maybe if you're playing like a Nekusar deck, then you could do that, because they can't discard and draw. They're going to die to all of your Nekusar effects. But
so narrow.
Yeah, maybe this is good in the Lord Windgrace deck.
Hey, Jimmy. Yeah. I got a proposition for you.
Oh, boy.
Have you heard of a card called Opposition Agent?
I have. Oh, no. That's actually pretty good.
I get to tutor for 3 things, and then you still have to discard 3 cards at random?
Yeah, that's pretty pretty brutal.
Whenever there's a search effect on cards, I'm always like... Well, in that case,
they wouldn't discard any cards, because they're not going to draw any, right? They're like, yeah, no thanks.
Is it if you draw?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no. They discard any number of cards.
No. I'm talking about your search.
Oh, yeah, I don't
care about them drawing cards.
I don't want Opposition Agent. I was thinking Hole Breacher in that case.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I would Opposition Agent, and I would tutor for 3 cards out of your deck, and then you would discard 3 cards at random.
Yeah, that's awful, man. That's actually so rude.
Does that make you sad a little bit?
This makes this card look so much worse. That's what it does. Maybe if you're a Lord Windgrace deck and you don't care about things going into your graveyard, you're going to find your 3 best lands, and whether you play them or they get discarded, it doesn't matter. I could see that working there.
Are you going to play it?
No.
Okay. All right. That's red. Okay.
Red.
So
yeah.
Now we're on to green.
Womp womp.
Womp womp womp.
I thought red was okay.
Yeah, it wasn't that great.
Yeah. Kaldheim had some sick red cards. I'll just say that much.
Kaldheim. Kaldheim was good.
Kaldheim was good.
This is good too. Okay. I got a good one right here.
Okay.
Accomplished Alchemist. 3 and a green for a 2/5 elf druid. Tap to add 1 mana of any color.
Mm.
There's more. tap to add X mana of any one color, where X is the amount of life you gain to this turn.
Hey.
There we go.
That's a card.
Because 4 mana add 1 mana is like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, get
but
out of here.
4 mana add...
5? 6?
Yeah.
7?
I mean, the life gain decks are really good at gaining life.
Yes.
And so a lot of times this could gain you a ton. Have you ever played against a Well-Wisher? Like in those elves deck?
I haven't. Is it nuts?
Yeah, it's great. You just tap and you just gain like 10, 12 life off of your stuff. Yeah.
And then you tap this sucker. Wow, that's a lot of mana.
A lot of those decks, they have untap abilities as well. Like, you know, you return a forest, untap an elf, you know? So you can have these life gain decks that end up gaining a lot.
Right.
Tristani ends up gaining a ton of life.
Lathiel, the Bountous Dawn, that horse gains a lot. This reminds me of Kaidel, which taps for the number of cards you gain, but I think gaining life is much easier.
It is easier to gain. gain life than draw cards.
I do think it's a little limiting though, because being in green, green does have a lot of good, right? Like feed the clan with this is like, you're just tapping for 10 or whatever. Ooh. But like, I don't know, right? Like this is much better when you have white. And then Esper is like, right? Like a lot of the classic life gain cards are in other colors. So green has some things with the elf parts of it. This seems really exciting, though, for those life gain decks, because you can tap for a ton.
And Witherbloom is kind of in that life gain area in this one, which I like a lot, because we know that green-white has it, we know that black-white has it, and now that green-black has a little bit more overlap, I think it's a good space for it.
Yep, I like that quite a bit. Someone out there will be seeing this tap for a ton of mana very soon. Mm-hmm. Next up is Dragon's Guard Elite, one in the green for a 2/2 creature human druid with Magecraft. Whenever you cast or copy an instant or sorcery spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Dragon's Guard Elite. And you can pay 4 green to double the number of +1/+1 counters on Dragon's Guard Elite. So this is a card that's good early, relevant later, obviously. And it's a card that you would be happy to, in your +1/+1 counter decks, to sort of stack the counters on. Because at some point, for 6 mana, you can double it and double it again and make it huge. 6 mana is a lot, though.
Yeah. You said it all. Some people are going to like it for +1/+1 counters.
Yeah.
But I like that it's good early and good late, but, you know.
It's whatever.
It's whatever.
If you have ways to add trample, then this is much more relevant.
For sure. Okay. Ecological Appreciation. X2 green for a sorcery. Search your library and graveyard for up to 4 creature cards with different names that each have mana value X or less, and reveal them. An opponent chooses 2 of those cards, shuffle the chosen cards into your library, and put the rest onto the battlefield. Exile Ecological Appreciation.
Okay, so you're getting them onto the battlefield. That's interesting. They all have to have different mana values, though.
Different names. The mana value X or less.
X or less. So this isn't true tutoring, as you wrote down here, right?
Yeah, so if you are looking for specific things in your deck, this won't get it because you're giving your opponents the choice. And very rarely can you have enough redundancy in Commander to get 4 different cards that force them to give you exactly what you want. Like if you really want that Devoted Druid or that Heliod or something
like that.
It's
kind of
like the
gifts and given thing too.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to look at it as a value engine, essentially.
Yeah, the cool thing is that they do go onto the battlefield. So let's look at this as X is equal to 1. So this is a 4 CMC card. You can search your library, by the way, and graveyard. Keep that in mind. That's actually pretty sweet. And then you're going to find 4 creature cards with different names. At 1 CMC and 4 mana, I could see you just getting 4 mana dorks and 2 of them come out on the battlefield. So that ramps you by 2. So it's a 4 mana, whatever. When you're paying 6 mana for it, so now X is equal to 3. You're grabbing 3 CMCs. You're going to,
then you
know.
you're finally like breaking the
even
the mana cost.
Right. Yeah, because you're getting like 2/3 CMCs for 6 mana. Yeah. It costs
you
6 mana.
Six mana in, you get 2/3/3s on the battlefield. Then you're finally paying 6 mana for 2/3/3s.
Right.
Again, you don't get to choose which ones exactly.
Yeah, you
kind of
want to
choose.
You get to kind of. I feel like you're just going to try and go look for super high value cards that no matter what they give you, you're going to be happy with the result, but it's not going to be the thing that gives you the win on the spot. So, like, you'd find a Dockside Extortionist or a Recruiter of the Guard or an Imperial Recruiter or like a Fauna Shaman, because they don't need to be the same CMC. They're just CMC X or less, right?
Yes, that's
just
correct.
Different names. So you could just find super high value creatures, and no matter what the opponent takes away, you're still happy with the end result. Maybe you didn't gain mana on the cost, but you're essentially getting 2 things on the battlefield for free.
There are some ways to kind of get what you're looking for. I'm imagining this in those green-white decks that have a lot of combos in there, like Renegade Rallier and Safi, Eric's Daughter, and some of those things that do have that. Maybe you get something so horrible they don't want to deal with it, like Gaddock Teague.
Or if you're like an Aristocrats deck, you just find 4 combo pieces. Doesn't matter which 2 you keep because they're all good towards your end result, right?
You get like a Judith and the Reveler and like a
Viscera Seer. Yeah, you have a lot of different things you can pack out of there.
The thing is that you're never going to get exactly what you want, and that's what.
I mean, what if this was just, hey, you need to get a sac outlet. You can pay enough mana to get 4 creatures that all can do sac outlet things.
Technically, you only need 3 too.
Right, so that could be worth it there. It's interesting. I think the question I'm trying to ask, like, are you that big mana deck that's trying to get 4 huge things? You're putting like 6 into this, Or are you better off grabbing four small creatures?
How many four drops do you have in your deck? Do you have four one drops, two drops, three drops, etc.?
I think I would have. I have at least two to three one drops, and definitely a bunch of two drops and a ton of three drops.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking about in those creature based combo decks a little bit, because I do know that there's a critical mass of those, you know, two and three drops in there.
Yeah. So I think this card is actually really interesting. I think, you know, you could be the deck that can do both early and late, you know, because a lot of those green decks have a lot of like early one mana CMC rampers to get to the big spells later. And then later on in the game, you can cast this for way bigger and you can still get, right? Like if you pull out a Craterhoof, a Woodfall Primus, and two other creatures on that level, no matter what they leave you with, you're going to get.
Do you think you can get up that mana?
I don't know. I don't think so. But like at the same time, if you're.
Because like, here's the thing, like, would you rather have that in your deck or a Green Sun Zenith?
Obviously a Green Sun Zenith.
Hopefully, Court of Calling.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is just...
Would you rather have a Birthing Pod?
I actually would rather have this and that, because you can play it early and get some value out of it, right? Just getting four one drops and being like, okay, give me two mana dorks is going to ramp you really well and prepare you for the next turn. And later on, if you need to draw Green Suns or a card like Ecological Appreciation, you can at least get something out. It's not going to ever guaranteed get you that win con, I don't think. And I think they made it that way on purpose.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Emergent Sequence. One in the green for a sorcery. Search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, tapped, then shuffle. Pretty good so far. That land becomes a 0/0 green and blue fractal creature that's still a land. Put a +1/+1 counter on it for each land you had enter the battlefield under your control this turn. Okay, Rampant Growth is good, but a land that can then get blown up, not so good.
Yeah, I mean, but people do play Dryad Arbor and they use it for other things, you know.
Yeah, people play that Nissa that makes your lands into 3/3s, obviously. Like, creature lands aren't the worst. You just feel really bad when they get blown up.
Yeah, and sometimes you just want your ramp to ramp and have it be safe. And that's why we get lands on the battlefield sometimes rather than playing mana dorks and stuff like that.
I don't think you're going to see very many people that are going to pinpoint removal at your land, though. They're going to want to kill something else.
I think it's going to get swept up in a board wipe or something like that.
That's the real case that this thing goes away, I think, right? And then potentially become a 3/3 or 4/4 if you're playing your Omnath Locus of Creation decks. You know, you're trying to get tons of landfall triggers in. So I could see Emergent Sequence making a big creature, but at the very minimum, it's another 2-mana sorcery that ramps you a land. So it's another Rampant Growth that has just been introduced to the format.
I like it. I think I'll like it more if there's like, maybe I do have those Nissas or some other synergy or +1/+1 counter synergies or something flavorful that makes it, you know, edges out the other kinds of ramp spells.
This kind of card makes it hard for other colors to catch up, because now we have three visits being reprinted, Emergent Sequence, red, white. They never get anything as efficient really on this consistent basis. Not to mention this is an uncommon.
Okay. Yeah, I like that it's an uncommon a lot. Okay. Exponential Growth. Woo! X green, green for sorcery. Until end of turn, double target creature's power X times.
Timmy's Rise Up. There are a lot of big, like, pour as much mana into X and then do crazy things. This is big, dumb, and fun. It's a sorcery, though. So, man,
I really wish this was an instant.
Right?
It was like the clunkiest combat trick anywhere.
Yeah.
What if this was just the clunkiest berserk? It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It could have been instant. I mean, maybe it wouldn't be that fun and limited, but.
Yeah, people online were just writing what they could make really big. Like, Gashath gets the 28 power when you pay 6 in this. Your Galta becomes a 48-48. Your Impervious Great Worm becomes a 64-64. I mean, that seems like the best case here, because no trample, right? You gotta
have trample on the creature.
What if you just fling it? There you go. Just fling it.
Fling it.
Okay. Last green card of the day is a Verdant Mastery, the final one in the cycle. 5 in the green for a sorcery. You may pay 3 in a green rather than pay the spell's mana cost. Search your library for up to 4 basic land cards and reveal them. Put one of them onto the battlefield tapped under an opponent's control if the 3 in a green cost was paid. Put 2 of them onto the battlefield tapped under your control and the rest into your hand, then shuffle. So if you're paying 6 mana for this, 5 in a green, you're going to get 4 basic lands, 2 of them on the battlefield, and then 2 into your hand. If you're paying 3 in a green, you get 2 on the battlefield, 1 in your hand, and 1 under an opponent's control tapped.
Ramp at later points in the game is far worse than ramp in the early game.
Right. So you'd want to pay 4 mana for this, not 6.
Yes. At 6 mana, you're not really getting everything that you want out of it. Because you have 6 mana already. You're ramping to 8, and then you have your 9th land. It's fine, but you can get there faster at all points along the curve if you just ramp earlier on.
Yeah, you wrote it was interesting, like, is this much worse than the template discovery that doesn't get their full value? And I would say, yeah, because you're only getting basic lands with Verdant Mastery. You can't find your crazy, super crazy utility lands.
Yep. And that's a big, I think that is the deal breaker for it. Man, if you could get any land, you know, there are lands out there that are just like blue creatures have bands with legends or something like that. Like there's so many weird troll lands out there. I would love to have this get your Gaia's Cradle and then you just give someone like a troll land.
A weird land that doesn't even tap for mana or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't tap for mana. It does something really awful.
Gives you, you give them a Mazavith on the condition they can never use it against you.
Oh man.
I like that you wrote this down. If you have basic land walk in your deck, like Swamp Walk or whatever, then you can give them the land and then your creature can attack them forever.
Good, good. There's a bunch of elf lords that give forest walk.
Yeah.
We're really reaching here. I think this is bad.
Yeah, it's a big downside, I think. Maybe you can play this in Jadzi because you want to get lands into your hand and casting a 6-mana spell isn't insane in the deck that's just ramp, 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 ramp all day. But otherwise, there's so many options in green that I don't think this is really ever going to see any play.
Agreed.
Okay, that does it for our monocolored cards in Strixhaven. We have multicolored coming up next. But right now, we're going to talk about something even more interesting. Most powerful new monocolored card. I'm just going to grab the ones that I think I want. Let's see if I can find this Ede one. We're pretty agreed on this one. So you want to just say it?
Yes. Baleful Mastery.
Yeah, one of the most efficient removal spells we've seen in quite a while.
It's just an efficient removal spell. It just kills things. It's great.
Who doesn't like something that kills things?
Yeah.
I'm also a big fan of my favorite new monocolor card is Solve the Equation. Because, look, we need more tutors that are accessible. That is important. That's important to me.
It is important.
And then what did you have down? Oh, yeah, you had this. Actually, I like this one as well for a favorite.
Yeah, so one of my favorite new cards is the Sedgemoor Witch, which is the one that creates those pests with every instant and sorcery spell you cast. Has Menace, is good. Yeah.
Yep. And then we also both wrote down Secret Rendezvous as our new favorite new monocolor card.
Look, there's so much. I think that the more hate there was for it, that like people were saying, like tweeting at me, they're like, it's not good. And I'm like,
it's fine.
I'm like, I like it. I think it is good.
Yeah, and I want to see it played, and I want people to have fun playing it when they do. And the only other card that popped up to me is Orik Lore Mage, because I'm just excited to put it into my Marchesa deck, and that's always going to sway my opinion.
Honestly, any card also that can just combo with Necrotic Ooze like that, where it's just like, oh,
you just cast
Necrotic Ooze and you won the game? Okay.
Okay, sure, why not? All right.
That kind of engine is awesome.
That's going to wrap up our set review for this part of it today. To the listeners, what are your favorite cards from the monocolor cards we just mentioned? What commander decks are they going into? Did we miss a combination that's so obvious that you can't believe that the Command Zone podcast could have blanked on it? Let us know in the comments, but in a nice, polite way. And of course, if you want to pick up any of these cards, head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Just type that affiliate link in, hit enter, blammo. The affiliate code will be applied. You're on the exact same site you were before. And now you can pre-order all of your awesome stuff from Strixhaven, maybe even just order at this point. We also have Forgotten Realms coming out. We're going back to Innistrad later this year. Lots of really interesting stuff.
Modern Horizons 2. Was so good to me.
Yeah, I can't wait. There's so many ways to in cards in that format that it did feel like Commander Horizons quite a bit. So I'm excited to see what happens in the second version of that. And when you get those cards, protect them with Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro sleeves, you got the amazing dice, you got playmats, you got deck boxes, all sorts of ways to make your cards look better than they ever did before. And they're never going to get hurt by water or the elements or whatever else they're up to on that crazy College of Strixhaven. Now, normally we do end steps, but not this week, not this month, because
we only do one end step a week for normal Command Zone episodes. We're pumping out so many episodes that we just gotta get to the next episode.
Yeah, tell us in the comments what your end step would be. Okay. Big thanks to Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Alfred the Soccer, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Down, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, and Gaurav Gulati. And big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations that often live behind us on set and do star our show at the YouTube page that we're at. You can find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG. We're talking too much. We got more set reviews to cover, so we're just going to leave it at that, right, DJ?
Ring that bell icon because there's another episode coming out. We're going to cover the multicolored cards, the colorless cards, some lands, good stuff coming up very soon.
All right. Bye, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.